My name's Tim Dews and I run Airborne Composites, which is a repair facility for Grob Motor Gliders, and Airborne Pyrotechnics, which is a twilight display team with my son here at Wing Farm, Longbridge Deverall.
What about your past?
Well, I grew up on an airfield while my father flew gliders, Marshalls initially in Cambridge and then Duxford, and at 16 went to Lasham to do an apprenticeship repairing gliders. I came down from Lasham to Dilton Marsh to build a little business jet, a four-seat business jet, in the late 80s, and set up here in 1990, and I've been here ever since.
Well, you say here, we're at a place called Wing Farm, which is basically a field about 5 miles outside Warminster. So how do you just set up at the end of a field, a shed and a hangar, and fly from here?
Well, it was the maintenance side that we did first. It's and the nice thing about a farm strip, it's quiet and out the way, so you haven't got all the busy bustle of an airfield.
It seems like you've got some sort of like a maintenance facility. That seems to be the sort of bedrock of what you're doing.
That is. I mean, you if your income was solely on the displays, you'd be broke very quickly. So we have an established maintenance facility. And we look after about 30 to 35 Grob motor gliders, as the ones we use in the display, and about 70 gliders. And we do the composite repairs when they break them in half, landing in fields and things. And the displays are subsidised flying that we enjoy.
So how does it compare to, say, an ordinary garage, you know, doing your MOT, your annual service, that sort of thing, with aircraft?
We don't get to charge them enough money. I still pay £100 an hour to have my car serviced, and our hourly rate is £55 an hour. So, and that's how it is with aviation.
Does an aircraft have to have an MOT every year? How does it work?
It has an annual, a 1 year check, and it has maintenance every 50 hours if it has an engine. There are people doing the maintenance, but there are very few in the country doing the repairs, and that's where we specialise.
When we hear about accidents, that sort of thing, it's often pilot error. To what extent are the aircraft themselves these days safe?
Oh, they are safe. It's the guy holding the stick that breaks them most of the time, or taxiing into a pothole, or putting the brakes on and tipping on its nose. They don't fall apart. The design, especially the Grob, the German-built aeroplanes, are fantastically strong. JR-22s, so they're cleared for 5.3G, which means they're tested to something like 7G and designed for something like 9G.
So, okay, give us an idea of how, you know, what that might feel like to someone that's never been in one of these.
Well, if you weigh 100 kilos at 1G, one gravity, at three gravities, you'd weigh 300 kilos. So your arm would be three times as heavy. And we operate them at 4G, four gravities, positive. We don't do any negative stuff because it's an aspirated engine. It's not injected. So if we do any 0G or negative G, the engine coughs.
Oh, well, it's not much fun if you engine conks out in mid-flight.
Well, it's not a big problem. It is a motor glider. It's 28 to 1, so it'll do 28 feet forward for every 1 foot down. And you've only got to turn the key and start it again. It's not the end of the world.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. Next time, I mean, airliners don't conk out like that, do they?
Well, they do. The one that went through Mount Helens, the soot at Mount Helens, they put all four engines out on a 747. I think it flew for about 12 minutes with no engines going at all. Everything will glide. It's just the steepness of how it comes down.
Okay, well, you've got two of these aircraft sitting here. The first thing I notice is they don't have any wings.
Well, I take them off and stack them to the side because you spend hours walking around the darn things. If you're doing maintenance on them, it's much easier to get around them with the wings off.
Okay, so what are you doing with this? I mean, this one here has got its engine covers on, but this one's off. What are you doing to this one?
Well, they're both in for annuals, but that one's just finished, and I tend to do them one at a time. I finish that one and then get on to the next one because they're all identical. And it's very easy to get everything mixed up. So one at a time, that's why they're like that.
Let's go and have a little look at this engine. Tell us a bit about what keeps this thing in the air.
It's a flat 4 VW based engine. It's based on a 2-litre engine and it's been tweaked by Grob up to 2.5 litres. Develops 95 horsepower. It only revs to 3,300.
I mean, that's not much more powerful than your average car, is it, really?
Well, normally in a car, for every litre, you'd get 100 horsepower. So out of 2.5 litre, you'd be looking at 250 horsepower in a car revving to about 6,000 or 8,000. But in an aircraft, the propeller obviously can't go that fast, otherwise it goes supersonic, and they get the reliability out of it by only revving it to 3,300.
So what sort of power are you getting out compared to a car?
Well, out of this 2.5-litre engine, we're only getting 95 horsepower.
I'm surprised that an aircraft has to be much less powerful than a car. Why is that?
The long wings on them make them very efficient. It doesn't need much more than that to fly. The other aeroplanes, the Cessnas and the like, have 5 and 6 litre engines and more horsepower, but they use more fuel. This at 90 miles an hour, it sips fuel at about 15 litres an hour.
Okay, so a Piper and a Cessna, most of the planes we've seen going over, the light aircraft, are these American aircraft. So how does this, I mean, to the sound, this compares quite favourably with those.
Well, they're generally about 150 to 180 horsepower with up to 5 litre engines. This is very economic and quiet, which is why it makes it perfect for what we use it for with the displays.
How much can you actually fit in there, in the cockpit?
It'll take 2 100-kilo pilots and 20 kilos of baggage with 100 litres of fuel. So its duration is 6 hours, and most people's bladders is about 3.
How far can you fly this thing, then? What's the range?
I've done 2 6-hour flights to Finland. We did Portugal last weekend in 8.5 hours, coming back with 1 stop at La Rochelle for fuel. So you can fly it for 6 hours at just under 100 miles an hour.
Okay, so I suppose the bottom line for anyone curious is, how much is one of these going to set you back?
These were all built in the late 80s, and they came on the market at about 38,000. They tend to change hands now in the region of 40 to 55,000. If they built this same aeroplane today, exactly as it is, with the cost of materials and bits and pieces, it would be about £150,000 to £160,000.
So why such a difference?
It's 30 years old.
Are they building anything like this anymore?
No, they're not at all. But
so it's almost like it's becoming a bit of a classic aeroplane.
It is, but the RAF fleet have just been purchased by a charity called Aerability, and they're going to re-engine them with a more modern Rotex engine and put a hook on them so they can use them as glider tugs and work them back into the light aviation market. So they're not dead. They're life at 12,000 hours. And most of these aeroplanes in here, I think this one's got 1,500 on it, and this one's got about 4,000 hours on it in 30 years. So it won't be my lifetime it'll be a problem.
What about the uses of them? What are they mostly used for, other than what you're doing?
Well, they're like a lot of aeroplanes, they're toys, aren't they? Unfortunately, our weather is for glider pilots isn't the best all the time. So when the weather's not good for gliding, you can use these. And they're full night capable, but they do fly in visual flight conditions. So the weather has to be, they can't fly instrument rated. They have to fly in reasonable weather, whether it be night or day.
So it's basically a motor glider. Why is that more or less useful than having, say, a normal light aircraft? Why would someone buy one of these rather than have a Cessna or a Piper?
They're more graceful, they're quieter. You can actually shut the engine off and go gliding in them. They say it's 28 to 1 is the glide ratio, so for every foot down, it'll go 28 forward. Your average Cessna is about 7, and not very streamlined. Plus, you're looking at the economy of 15 litres an hour with one of these, and probably 35 to 40 litres an hour with a Cessna or a Piper.
So how did you get into doing displays?
It was, again, through Aerability and the 2012 Paralympic opening ceremony.
Okay, so tell us a bit about this Aerability. What is that?
Well, it's a glider pilot from Lasham, who's now very disabled, and he set the charity up to teach disabled people to fly, and they're based at Blackbush, and they have 3 or 4 aeroplanes, and they get people flying. So they're at Blackbush, it's near Farnborough, up the M3, and I've seen the people that they've got flying, and it's I think it's a brilliant course.
What's the idea of getting disabled people up in the air?
To keep them going, to give them something, to strive for. And there's no reason being disabled that you can't fly. There's a girl in America flying with no arms at all. She flies a whole aeroplane with her legs.
How do you do that? You can't. You stick. I mean, goodness me, how does she do it?
She has a video of her online doing it. She does it all with her feet, the throttle, the radio, everything with her feet. It's absolutely amazing to watch.
Okay, doing the displays then. When did you first realise actually this is something that I could maybe do a little bit more of?
Well, as I say, we were involved with the Paralympic opening ceremony where they had a disabled person flying over London with pyros on the aeroplane. And we had a party here on the Strip the same year, 2012, and I put some pyros on the grob and flew it, and somebody made a video.
So what are these, just like fireworks, November the 5th fireworks, you stick on the side of the plane?
Some are, the Roman candles are, but the waterfalls we use are handmade for us, and they burn at about 15,000 degrees C, so we have to have quite complicated stainless steel mounts to stop them burning the aeroplane.
Oh, I bet.
And we have to be careful that we don't set anything on fire, so we have a safety height of above 1,500 feet at which we don't deploy the fireworks.
Okay. The wing of this aircraft, is it some sort of metal? Is it? I mean, obviously, if you've got pyrotechnics, you don't really want a plastic or some kind of fiberglass wing, do you?
It is a fiberglass wing.
Oh, no.
But there's no fuel in it. The fuel is in the fuselage. The wings are dry. And we have a stainless steel fitting that goes on the tip of the wingtip that takes all the fireworks, and they can burn to their heart's content without hurting the aeroplane.
I imagine you're just doing evening displays then, if you're doing fireworks.
No, we do three displays. We do a day show with coloured smoke on the wingtips and engine smoke, and then we do a twilight display with the engine smoke and the LEDs on the fuselage, and then we do a full night show with the LEDs and the pyrotechnics on the wingtips.
Okay, so where have you been recently? Have you been doing any of this during the pandemic, the lockdown?
It screwed up for everybody, but we did New Year's Eve in Portugal, and we've just finished 8 displays in Portugal last week, and we've done, I think, 3 weddings and parties just before we went out to Portugal, and we were meant to be at Leszno in Poland this weekend coming, but we thought we'd be quarantined, and we had to cancel it. But a lot of the shows were cancelled.
So what were you doing in Portugal? Tell us about that display.
It was laid on by Albufeira Town Council to say thank you to the Portuguese people who basically kept the industry alive by going to the beaches. They're down 90% on their tourism. So it was a thank you to do for them. And it was, they didn't know anything about it. We just rocked up on the beach. They played the vans rocked up and played the music. And
you turned out of the skies to the surprise of the people on the beach in the evening.
In the afternoon, yeah.
Oh, it was an afternoon. It wasn't an evening thing.
No fireworks. It was all days. It was to get the people on the beach just to say thank you to them.
I suppose they've mostly left the beach by the time the sun goes down anyway.
That's right. They're in the hotels or the bars by then. But
okay, so what sort of display was it? So if I was sitting on the beach or standing on the beach, what would I have seen?
Well, the first thing you'd have heard is the music. They had these big trucks with big speakers and beautiful reproduction sound of Polish bands. And it had 1:45 intro, and then you would have seen this heart being drawn in the sky by these two aeroplanes that were basically inaudible. And then after that, we went into a 10-minute display of loops and wing overs and quarter clovers set to the music.
So you're talking about vehicles that actually drive out onto the beach, which are purpose-built, almost like maybe with a flatbed on the back of the van, a pickup with giant speakers on. That sounds like an interesting idea.
Well, that's exactly what it was, and the people absolutely loved it. It went down very well. But we were out there at New Year's Eve, the Carpenox. They had 140,000 people on the beach, and they put a big stage up. And we did the same thing for New Year's Eve after the countdown to New Year's Eve. We were out there flying, but that was a full night show with pyros.
So you're practicing. Now, I think that's where I first came across you, driving out of Warminster one evening, spotted you.
Well, my son and I, we run the team as Airborne Pyrotechnics, and we keep in practice every nice evening. We only live half a mile away, so it's no big hardship to just finish dinner and come and have an hour or so doing the routines just to keep the hand in.
So, I mean, a lot of this, what you're talking about here, are aerobatic manoeuvres. I mean, you're going upside down, round and round. I mean, surely that's going to affect your concentration and maybe a bit dangerous, actually.
Everything has an element of risk. The daylight shows are not a problem, and the evening ones, twilight, are not a problem either. The dark shows, the full night shows in the middle of nowhere where there's no lights or ground reference points, can cause problems. And when that's the case, we tend to, or even over the sea, if you're displaying over the sea, there's just nothing, it's black. And when the fireworks go off, your eyes, pupils just shrink right down, and your night vision just goes out the window. So we tend to keep the manoeuvres very simple in those conditions.
So where did you learn to do your aerobatics, or did you just learn it yourself?
Oh, various gliding clubs over the years, and I've been looking after these aeroplanes for 35 years since they came on the market, and they're beautiful for it. They're perfect. The nice thing about the motor glider, if glider aerobatics are silent, so they start very high and they're nearly over by the time people realise it's going on. Whereas the motor glider, you can hold that box from 1,500 feet down to 800 feet, and you can do the whole display for about 8 minutes in that box, and that's most people's attention span.
Have you ever been close to touching wings, that sort of thing, a little bit dicey moments?
No. I mean, it looks close when we're flying, but you drive down the road in your car.
It did. It looked very close.
You drive down the road in your car at 60 miles an hour, and there's a car going the other way at 60 miles an hour, and you're only 6 feet apart. We never come within 4 metres, 5 metres of each other. It's just the way it looks. It looks close.
But that can be really dicey in the dark, surely.
Not really. We're all lit up like Christmas trees. It's and we're in the same air mass. So if one aeroplane moves, the other aeroplane moves in the same air. So it's not a problem.
Okay. You're allaying my fears here. What about these? Because I remember when we saw you in the sky over Warminster, you had these kind of... I mean, it did look a bit like a UFO. I didn't know what. I've never seen an aircraft with sort of... It was a kind of bluey colour and greeny colour on the side of it. It didn't look like an aircraft at all to me.
There are thousands of colour-changing LEDs that bring the aeroplane alive in the twilight. And that's what you'll have seen. And we do play on the alien bit as well. We do sometimes we switch the engine off, and we do sometimes switch the lights on and off. So we are, it looks like with two aeroplanes we can morph across the sky. It goes off there and comes on somewhere else. So we do tease the public a bit with it.
And how do you get on with your landlord, the farmer here?
Brilliantly. Earl and I used to own an aeroplane together, and he stopped flying now. But as I say, I've been here 30 years, and it's perfect. It's like having your own airfield.
So he looks like he's just finished mowing the main runway there. How long is your runway? Because it's actually quite small compared to most airports, isn't it?
It's 500 metres. It's just long enough for these aeroplanes. It's a bit tricky coming in at night sometimes, but it works. It's enough. So enough of that. Let's go and have a look at the aeroplane outside.
Oh yes, you've done this before. You got in a little bit quicker than me.
It is awkward getting in that side. I'll just start the engine.
Well, that's actually not too noisy. We can hear ourselves think.
Yeah, well, let's say it's only 95 horsepower. With a nice big silencer, and that's one of the advantages of the aeroplanes. We practice a lot around here, and nobody complains about the noise because it is so quiet. So everything on the right hand side of the panel is for the engine: fuel capacity, cylinder head temperature, oil pressure, a rev counter just like a car with a clock. And in the middle we've got a tom-tom for the air. It's a view from above of the landscape and the airspace. Then next to that we have a radio for talking to air traffic, and we have a transponder which shows the air traffic where we are. Then next to that we have an altimeter which shows us how high we are in hundreds and thousands of feet. And beneath that is a variometer. It basically shows us how fast we're going up or down. This is a vertical compass, a vertical card compass. So it's a 360 degrees but laid out flat. This is our accelerometer, which shows how many gravities. At the moment we're at one gravity for the aerobatics. And above it, an airspeed indicator. And this is a horizon for flying in bad weather or at night if we can't see the horizon. So I put my straps on.
Here. going to have to.
We're going to do a. We're going to run round the corner and accelerate to the west there. And if we're not airborne in 350 metres, then we're going to stop and come back and take some fuel out.
Well, we're now up now. Your altimeter saying around about 800 feet, is that?
That's correct, 800.
So that's not very high, is it?
How high do you want to go?
Right, so we can see, actually, we've got a beautiful view of Longleat House just down to our right now, and it does look like they've just mowed the lawn. An enormous great mowing machine has been up and down there. Lovely view up here. But look, the first question is, when you're up here, how do you avoid other aircraft? How do you know where you are, if you are where you shouldn't be?
Well, fortunately, there's no restricted airspace up from Salisbury Plain and Bristol Airport around here. So we have to look out. You have to maintain your own separation from other aircraft.
Okay, so basically you've got to keep your eyes open.
Exactly, exactly that. So we're always scanning the horizon and the instruments. We're never fixated in one position for any length of time at all. And this is Longleat House, and we're very lucky to have this as in our back garden, and we've done several displays there actually off the driveway, and they're very good.
When you're doing your aerobatics, what sort of, because you don't want to be this low down really, do you, if you're doing a loop or something?
We can loop down to, you can fly down to 500 feet without any problems or any extra special permissions, and 500 feet's low enough. If you go much lower than that, people can't see you, so we tend to start with the pyros at 3,000 feet and work our way down to about 800 feet, and if it's night we don't come below 1,000 feet.
I mean, a lot of people haven't really had much of this view that we've got now. They might see a little bit of it when they're taking off in an airliner, landing. If someone's interested in actually having a go at flying, are there ways to do that just in these light aircraft?
Well, have a go at a gliding club. There's one at the Kingston Devil, the park, and there's Keevil, Bannerdown at Keevil Airfield. That's by far the best way to get into the air without spending huge amounts of money. And if you've got more money to spend, then there's Comp Nabis where you can go and fly an aeroplane. But the minute you put an engine on the front, the cost trebles. If you're over 110 kilos, most gliders can't cope with you, and the fuselage is quite narrow, so you'd probably struggle. So if you're under 110 kilos and you can drive a car, you can fly an aeroplane and a glider.
Well, while we're chatting, everything's changing below us, and we've got some, it looks like quite a large town on our left now.
That's Warminster coming up here in front of us, and I'm just going to do a turn round to the right and show you Clay Hill. This is all centre parks in the Longleat Forest here, buried in the trees, but if you look out to your right wingtip there, Clay Hill, which was the capital UFO sighting hotspot in the UK for many years. They used to sit up here with their binoculars and things at night looking for aliens.
While we're hovering over Clay Hill, there's a little bit of turbulence. Maybe it's a good time to ask you what you make of this whole UFO phenomenon.
I do have an alien outfit which I put on occasionally, and we fly balloons, and I've been talking to Cameron about getting an alien balloon manufactured. We'll call it the Warminster thing. You have to be in a position that you can glide clear of a town, so you can't fly over the town below 1500 feet. And if you don't need to fly over the town, then don't do it. It's just the noise that could upset people. And they've got such beautiful scenery and countryside to fly over. Fly over that, it's much nicer.
Okay, so what about anybody that might be interested in owning their own aircraft, but maybe wants to part own it with someone? Does that sort of thing happen much?
Yeah, most of the aeroplanes in the UK are owned by syndicates, because you can't fly every day. The very keen people, glider pilots, tend to own their aircraft outright, so they can fly it on every day that it's soarable. But yeah, so the group-owned aeroplanes is quite common.
If people listening want to see you, what's the best way to do it?
Look on the website, ring me up, have a chat. For displays, I ask for a postcode so I can have a look at the display area and make sure it's not in airspace or a built-up area, and then we go from there if it's for a display.
Now, we're here at Warminster. You're very close to the military, What happens? I mean, do you ever accidentally fly over there? What are the rules?
Well, we don't fly over Salisbury Plain without talking to Salisbury Ops, because it is an active danger area 24/7 up to 55,000 feet, so it's a no-go area. We all go around it. And so you can see some traffic here. A little red aeroplane appeared here. Can you see it?
Oh, yes, I see him, yeah.
Is it an aeroplane or autojar? It's an autojar, I think. So this is why I say we maintain our own separation. You have to keep a good lookout.
It's a helicopter, isn't it?
It's an autojar. It's like a helicopter, but it's no engine actually driving the blades. The blades are actually just blown round, and the engine just to propel the aircraft through the air forwards.
Are you chasing him? What are you up to?
You know, just having a look to see if I knew it. I knew him, but I don't, so keeping out of the way.
So he'll probably be here looking at Clay Hill, will he? What would he be up to?
Well, because we've got Salisbury Danger Area here, it does funnel all the traffic round here, so it's quite a bottleneck for aircraft. That's why we have to keep our eyes open all the time. It can land shorter. It doesn't take as much distance to land as it does to take off.
What about the trees?
Well, it's best to go over them. It's got very good air brakes, so you can do a very steep approach into the field without any problems, as you saw.
I love your little airfield here, because most people would drive past, they wouldn't even know you were here. I wonder how many of these small strips there are around the country.
Lots. There are lots. And you only see them because there's an aeroplane parked outside. There are lots, especially if you're flying. You see there's a new one just gone up in Westbury, just this side of Westbury. And you can fly. You can put a strip on your own land and operate it 28 days a year without any planning permission.
Amazing. Well, okay, so if people want to find you online, whereabouts? What's the best place to look and find your videos?
They can Google Tim Dews or Google Airborne Pyrotechnics or YouTube. You'll get me very quickly on any of those.
Okay, Tim, thanks very much.
You're welcome.